we're always told not to go anywhere by yourself as women, especially at night, and we're going out on the town. Don't go to the restroom by yourself. Don't take a cab by yourself. Check in. Thankfully, a lot of us hear the warning, but we don't live through what they're warning us of. But it does happen. And that's what happened in Denver, Colorado, to a young college student named Kenya Monge. This is her story. Hi, everybody. It is take two of this episode. I hated how the recording came out the first time. I also hated how I looked. I look more like me. I don't know what I was attempting with my makeup. I saved you if you're watching this. But, you know, I don't know anybody in the podcasting world, but probably like my first friend ever actually started a podcast called Of Malice and Mirth. They do like spooky comedy stories. Check it out, because I heard the first episode and I think it's going to be great. So please give them a listen and a follow, or follow me for those of you who aren't. I'm finishing up my character. If you're watching on YouTube, you should be able to see the final product after this. But if you've got everything ready, or if you're doing something else, great. But let's get started. So Kenya is a 19-year-old college student from Aurora, Colorado. And she is this very ambitious, driven, and vibrant young girl. And she's this tiny little thing. She's super petite. And she's beautiful. She's a beautiful girl. And she's very lively. She grew up with her parents, a very tight-knit household. They're very protective of each other. They're very supportive of each other. And if she's not with her family, she's either with her boyfriend, Leo, who recently she moved in with. She had moved in with her boyfriend, Leo, not too long before our story really begins to happen. And if she's not with Leo or with her family, she's out with her friends. She has a lot of friends. She's very social. And she's got a good set of friends. They all look out for each other. They all like to have a good time, like most 19-year-olds, right? Especially college students. And in school, she's actually very creative. She doesn't want necessarily to be on camera, but she wants to create, whether it's a director, producer, assistants. She wants to be behind the camera. On March 31st of 2011, Kenya plans on going out with her friends that night. So she texts her sister Kim and lets her know what her plans are for the evening. She's going to be clubbing downtown. And she doesn't go out with her boyfriend Leo. It's just her and a bunch of girlfriends. And she sets out for the night. While she's out clubbing, and she's going to different clubs, kind of hopping around, she's actually using a fake ID and getting into 21 and up clubs, which means there's also underage drinking occurring. And they're not having any issues, nobody's bothering them, they're having a really good time. But at one point, while at the club, Kenya tells her friends, "I'm gonna go to the restroom, I'll be right back." She leaves her phone in her purse at the table where her friends are, because she plans on returning, but she does go by herself. This is the last time her friends will see her alive. Kenya just disappears. And her friends, not really thinking too much of it, they think she either got kicked out or that she met someone and left. But they didn't check in with her. They just figured, you know, Kenya can take care of herself, so they don't worry about it. But that next day, it's a little bit after noon, and Kenya's sister Kim gets a text from Leo, Kenya's boyfriend, and he asks her if she's talked to Kenya, because she didn't come home. And Kim is immediately concerned because this is very unlike Kenya. For her to not come home, Leo to not have heard anything from her, and Kim to not have heard anything, it's very out of character. Somebody should have heard something from her by now. She, like I said, she's very involved with her family. They talk regularly. And this is what really makes her worry. And she calls her dad immediately. When Kim calls her dad, she tells him what Leo just told her. And he knows too. Something is very wrong. This is not like Kenya. So he calls the police. But when he calls the police, and you know, almost like a tale as old as time at this point, they say like, well, she's 19. She's an adult. She could have not returned on her. She could have made a choice to not return. So they tell them to give her some time and then to call back. Of course, he is not happy with this. So they start calling around. Kim's already been calling around, trying to see if anybody's heard from Kenya. They know Kenya wouldn't just disappear and cause her family to worry like this. And then some of Kenya's friends that she was out with the night before show up to Kenya's parents' house to give them her phone and her purse. Mm-hmm. Kenya's father sees that they have her stuff. Now he's really concerned. These are both lifelines for women, purses, all of our stuff's in there, our money, our ID, everything, possibly our phone. And the phone's our other lifeline. It's the only way we have a way to get help, right? So these two being turned over and completely left behind must have made the hair on his neck stand up. I can't even imagine the fear and anxiety that would set in right at that moment. And to them, this basically means Kenya did not leave willingly. So once the phone is turned over to Kenya's parents, luckily, Kenya's mom actually knows her passcode to her phone and unlocks it to see if they can find anything in there. In Kenya's phone, they actually find a text sent from the night that she was out. It's the most recent text from anybody other than Leo. And it says something along the lines of, hey, this is Travis, you know, the guy with the creepy van, haha. Just wanted to make sure that you got home safe. This is especially concerning to Kenya's father because, like, who's Travis? They don't know anybody that Kenya knows named Travis. Why is he saying that I hope you got home okay? When was the last time he saw her? Where did he see her? So they know there's a story here. And Kenya's father just starts blowing that number up. He will keep calling and calling, but this Travis guy just doesn't answer. He keeps dodging the calls. While Kenya's father is trying to get a hold of this Travis guy, Kim and her family, as well as Kenya's friends, are busy making flyers and getting the word out that Kenya is missing. The next day, on April 2nd, still, nobody has heard from Kenya. They have no sign of whether she's okay or not. However, luckily, they finally get a return call from Travis. So when Kenya's father talks to Travis, Travis tells him that he had been doing deliveries. He does deliveries for a bakery, which explains his white van. He was out doing deliveries. He had actually given a friend a ride home at the end of doing his deliveries. And when he dropped his friend off at his apartment, he saw Kenya sitting outside on the curb crying to a homeless man. And he asked her, you know, if everything's okay. And she tells him that she got kicked out of the club. She doesn't have her phone, so she can't call anybody. So he offers her his phone. But she's not able to get a hold of anybody, which makes her become more upset, and she's even more scared. At this point, Travis offers to give her a ride. So while Travis is taking Kenya home, for one, they learn that they actually live pretty close to each other. They live in the same area. And then Kenya starts asking for a cigarette. But Travis doesn't smoke. So what he does is he decides to actually stop at a gas station and get some cigarettes for her. But while at the gas station, he says that Kenya started smoking cigarettes with this man outside. She bummed a cigarette off of him. So while Kenya is over here smoking with this stranger, Travis decides, well, I'll just leave her here then. And he takes off, which is so weird. Like, why offer somebody a ride and then leave them at a gas station? And he doesn't say, like, well, we had a discussion and agreed on me living there. Agreed on me leaving her there. He doesn't say anything like that. He just says he took off. Which definitely rubs anybody the wrong way. Like, what do you mean you left her there? That's just so weird. Like, essentially, you took her out of a bad spot and then put her back in the bad spot, just in a different location. It doesn't make any sense. And he tells her dad that, you know, after he left, he went straight home. Kenya's dad's obviously just like, what the hell? And he has more questions. Understandably, he starts asking him, okay, what time? Where was this at? What gas station? And when Travis tells him what gas station, he just tells him, meet me there. Good dad. So at this point, Kenya's father is like fuming and he's ready to hurt someone. Maybe not hurt someone, but he's definitely ready to put the fear of God in someone. And Travis is that someone. So when he gets ready to go meet Travis at this gas station, he grabs his gun. And this makes Kenya's mom even more scared. I mean, this woman's already terrified for her daughter. I think the idea of her husband possibly going to a gas station and shooting someone is just, you know, not the kind of stress she needs right now. So after he leaves with the gun, Kenya's mom calls the police and tells them what her husband's doing. So the police actually show up at the gas station to meet her dad before Travis does. And really, they're mainly concerned is like, okay, where exactly is the firearm? And he tells him, it's in the car. So they're like, okay, Travis shows up. And because it's been over 48 hours at this point that Kenya's missing, or just about 48 hours, they go ahead and do the missing persons report, and they also speak to Travis. And Travis tells them the exact same thing that he told Kenya's dad. It's the same story. They search his van. There's nothing sticking out. There's nothing unusual or suspicious. So they have no choice at this point but to let Travis go. And then the investigation begins. So on April 3rd, Kenya's family gets a call from the FBI and offer their assistance in this search. They start pulling surveillance cameras. They question Travis again. With the surveillance tapes, they learn that Kenya actually was kicked out of the club. They speak to the club and they tell them that she was kicked out for unruly behavior on the dance floor with another guy. I don't know what unruly behavior on the dance floor means, but that's what she was kicked out for. And then they can see her on camera walking along with this man she was kicked out with. They walk to his apartment, which is the apartment that Travis said he picked her up at. You see her enter the apartment with him. But then, I mean, mere minutes later, you see her come right down and exit the building. It possibly could be she went up to that guy's apartment to try to call her friends. They learn that so far everything Travis is saying is true. They actually even see her speaking to the homeless man outside the apartments. They see her sitting on the curb and you can see his white van pull up. So far, everything is stacking up in Travis's favor. They question Travis. He repeats the exact same story to a T. And they also question his girlfriend. And his girlfriend confirms that Travis did come home that night. The only thing that people are a little kind of put off with is Travis's girlfriend. Because considering the gravity of the situation, a young woman's missing that your boyfriend's had contact with recently, she seems very unbothered and has like no concern. She's actually very cold to the situation, almost like they're inconveniencing her by having her in there. But aside from being kind of shitty, that's all they got on her. So she leaves and Travis is free to leave. So they're trying to look into everything else because nothing is pointing at Travis. They have no other evidence showing that she ran into someone else or she came in contact with someone else. They don't know if that's what it is. And if it is, they don't know who. So they have to keep going. 5 days after Kenya vanishes, police get a phone call. And the phone call is actually coming from the owner of the bakery that Travis basically rents space from and handles the deliveries for. She's calling the police. And what she tells them is very daunting. According to this woman, she had recently been suspecting that somebody from inside her business was stealing from the cash register. She actually goes and checks her surveillance. However, when she goes to where it's recording, she notices that everything's actually unplugged. She plugs that back in and watches everything that's was captured before. What she saw made her call the police immediately because she sees that the day after Kenya went missing, Travis brings in an ice chest that's duct taped around, which is never a good sign. It's duct taped shut, and he goes and hides it in the walk-in freezer. Every time someone, you know, during business hours and everything, approaches the walk-in or has to go in there, Travis is literally right behind them monitoring what they're doing. Basically making it very obvious that there's something in there that he's trying to hide. Then she sees that once everybody goes home for the day, Travis enters the walk-in, pulls the ice chest back out, and then you see him walking to her office to unplug the surveillance. With this new information, police get warrants to search both the bakery as well as his van all over again. At the bakery, they don't really find anything. However, they do find a barrel with burnt remnants in there, and in those ashes and remains, they see a zipper. They know some kind of clothing has been burned in there. And in Travis's van, they don't find anything. However, they do find that it just really smells like bleach. It's clearly been thoroughly cleaned. However, they still don't have enough to arrest Travis. They just have to keep him in mind and keep working at this. The only other thing that they notice on this van is that the tires are really packed with mud and grass, meaning he definitely went to a more rural area and was off-roading, and this isn't a good sign either. Because we all know why people go to the country after having a duct-taped ice chest. So they also get a warrant for his phone records. And they see the pings and everything. They see that he did drive to a rural area. It's a small little farmland town. However, they don't have much to go off of because of how vast the land is. And they're not finding anything really like disturbed dirt or anything of that sort. They're kind of at square one still at this point. But then, on May 4th, police get a call from Travis's girlfriend and she says that Travis stole her car. Because of this, they're able to be out on the lookout, what are they called, BOLOs, out for him. And they actually catch him in Austin, Texas. So that dude had got pretty far. And because of this, they're actually able to get a swab of Travis's DNA. And they get to hold him in custody while they handle this vehicle theft. His ex-girlfriend actually drops the charges and they have to release Travis again. So upon his release, Travis actually leaves Aurora and he goes to Fort Collins, Colorado, where he has some family apparently. But Fort Collins is also a college town. Not too soon after, on July 4th of 2011, a woman is attacked at her apartment, a young college student. This girl had been out celebrating the 4th of July with her friends. She walked home, and as she was unlocking her door, she was suddenly pushed into her apartment, forced in there. She was raped, and she was severely beaten, savagely beaten. It was awful what was done to this girl. Then, after the beating and the rape, this girl has bleach poured on her and her apartment is set on fire. This poor girl is in horrible shape. She still manages to escape her apartment and the flames by jumping out a second story window. And when she jumps out, she breaks both of her ankles. It's terrifying what she went through, and it just, the fact that she was able to muster the strength and get out is remarkable. Again, the will to live really is amazing sometimes. So while this crime is being investigated, an investigator realizes that this is similar to Kenya Monge's case. She reaches out to the detective that's handling Kenny's case back in Aurora or in Denver. And she tells him that she has DNA from the person who assaulted this girl. He's basically like, great, I have Travis's DNA. So they put it in to test. So while they put this in and are waiting for the results of these tests, they're actually surveilling Travis. Because if it is him, they don't know when he's going to strike again. It hasn't been that long since Kenya, and we know it's usually a ramp up. An officer actually finds him following another young girl. He catches up to her, starts to kind of chat her up. So the officer intervenes. And when he intervenes, he notices that Travis actually gives him a fake name. He says he's someone else. But this officer is not an idiot. With this lie, he just kind of makes a mental note like, all right. And they keep watching him again. Too close together because I put space up here, not down here. Damn. Oh, always an error. They separate Travis from this girl that he's following, or they had eventually introduced himself to. And then, same night, he's following another girl. Luckily, as they're watching this, the call comes in and the DNA is a match. Travis's DNA and the man who assaulted the woman. It's a match. So police are able to move in now. They arrest Travis and charge him for the attack of the girl. And because now he knows, like, for sure the jig is up and he's facing life in prison, he tells the officer that now he'll help with the Kenya investigation, which I always hate, think is such a shitty thing. Like, now I'll help you so you can help me. Bitch, why don't you just help us and you get whatever we say you get. I know that's not the justice system and I know there's a reason why it's in place, but sometimes it really irritates me. Oh my God, she looks like Hitler. Oh no, let's take that out. Oh my God, that's terrible. I'll put it down here. What he tells officers is that when he picked up Kenya, the gas station story, complete shit, a fucking lie. He picks up Kenya and she passed out in his car, in the van. Because she passed out, he decides to rape her. Because that's what you do, apparently. Gross. He rapes her, and then she wakes up. After she wakes up, she starts to confront him about what he did. She realizes it pretty quickly, what's happened to her, and she gets pissed, as she should. Because of this, he strangles her to death. Then he agrees to take them to Kenya's body, because he buries her somewhere. He takes them out to this field, and he remembers where she's buried. Like, pinpoint knows. He knows exactly where she is still. And they find this poor girl curled up in the fetal position, naked. It's a sight no one should ever have to see. It's heartbreaking. She's already a petite woman, and apparently she looked even smaller there. Finding her so bittersweet, because the only reason that he even offered to take them to his body, or agreed to take them to her body, is because he said that he would only do it if the death penalty was off the table and if he didn't have to register as a sex offender, which blows my mind, because I don't know what world this man's living in where he thinks he's going to be back out. I don't think Colorado's that chill. So they agree, and that's how they find her. That day after she went missing, that her father, that Kenya's father, is calling Travis's phone. He didn't answer because he was doing all of this. He was busy covering up his tracks. The also dumbass fucking girlfriend, Carrie Humphrey, I think we should all know her name. Carrie Humphrey, who lied for him, she gets indicted as well for a false alibi, as she should. I hope that really goes on her record. I don't care who what your situation is for the most part. If you're willing going in there and lying, I think you need to be held accountable. That's gross. Especially, like I said, they noticed that she was very cold. I don't think this woman was abused before somebody comes out with that shit. She seemed like she just didn't give a shit. She just didn't fucking care. Fuck you, Carrie. Gross. Luckily, the Fort Collins victim survives. She had been had to be placed in a medically induced coma. She has permanent brain damage and damage to her throat. This is how bad he beat her. Horrible, horrible beating that this woman took. On October 21st of 2011, Travis is sentenced to life in prison with an additional 48 years, both for Kenya's murder and the basically attempted murder and the assault of the woman in Fort Collins. There is no doubt that Travis would have had more victims. There's a huge possibility that Kenya wasn't his first. If she isn't, we don't know, because he won't say. But her story reminds us just how quickly life can go from normal to a nightmare. And as friends, as much as we think everything's going to be okay, that we still need to be concerned and on alert. Just because it never happens to us, doesn't mean it never will. And that's the story of Kenya Monge. Oh, Lord. This thing came out horrible, and I'm so sad because of all the effort I put into it. It's supposed to be Jane, Daria's best friend. But I don't know about you, but I think she looks like Hitler. So I'm fucking terrified. Jesus Christ. Do I even put a mouth on her? Came out terrible. It'll make a fun TikTok, though. Put your hand down. Don't need people to think you're saluting. Jesus Christ. But yes, thank you for joining me. And remember, the most dangerous people look just like us. Okay, bye.